Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Many thanks to Elliot Perry for taking the time to join me in studio today. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's the Otis Redding version of Sam Cooke's The Change Is Gonna Come, which Otis recorded in Memphis in 1965, shortly after Cooke's death. You find it on his 1965 album, Otis Blue.
All right, it's obviously MLK Day. The Grizzlies have a game today against New Orleans. Tip-off at 4:30, symposium at 3. Bill Walton, Candace Parker, Chris Bosh, Wayne Embry will be there. It's a tough job that the Grizzlies have, isn't it, to figure out a way to by the way, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, we talked about this last week. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar evidently was here, so there you go. But it is a tough job they have to do this and to make it meaningful every single year.
Sure. With anything, familiarity sets in, and then, you know, I think the symposiums are not as well attended in the last few years as they were in the first few years. That's true with most things over time.
Right.
And, you know, so the novelty of things wears off. Obviously, it's harder to generate interest around anything during a bad year on the floor. And so you have that going for it. But, you know, it's good to see, obviously, it's something we've gone over a lot in the past. It's good to see the game back on national TV, if not in a primetime slot, at least not, you know, early in the day, middle of the day, like on real national TV.
Right.
And so that's good. And so, you know, it's always a good day for the Grizzlies, for the city every year, even if the interest is going to vary for other reasons year to year.
Right. Okay, well, let's get to some of those other reasons. Grizzlies played two games since we last spoke, gallantly against Boston and lost, and then considerably less gallantly against Toronto, where they just got absolutely destroyed. At one point trailing 102-62, 45-14 in the third quarter. Does anything that happened over the weekend change any of your macro thoughts on the Grizzlies?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think this homestand is gonna be determinative. Could be determinative of a lot of things. It felt a little bit like, you know, we had talked. They come off that win, that home win against San Antonio, which felt like maybe it was a turning point. But we talked at that time about how the next five games were gonna be brutal. And the question was, could they get a win or two? But then B, could they just maintain their sense of purpose until they got through those five brutal games and the schedule took a turn? They went 0-5 in those games. But there was sort of a pattern where, to me, the Boston-Toronto games over the weekend mirrored the start of that five games, where they went to Miami and they played a really good game and then just couldn't pull it out at the end. And that seemed to sap their spirit, you know, at Houston. And then they're vulnerable home against Milwaukee. And then they go into Boston and they play a really good game. That was a good basketball game. And they were right in it up to the end. And, like, Boston had Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving made the shots, and Boston won at home. And then they just sort of lost the rope again at Toronto. And you wonder how many times they can keep sort of willing themselves into better basketball and then not be able to pull out games before they just lose it completely. I mean, obviously from a record standpoint, they pretty much lost it completely. But this pattern of, like, you know, playing well, coming up short, and then getting blown out, like, how many times does that get repeat until you're just getting run off the floor every night, right? And so I think these five games are really, really important. Starting with today, you're on national TV for the only time all season, at least the only time at home all season. And New Orleans is playing without Anthony Davis, who is like 50% of their team, basically. And so, like, you know, we're past the point of must wins. Like, that's like comedy at this point. But, like, this would be a really good day to get a win.
Yes, this would be a really good day to get a win. What could change, though? In other words, like, in the end, won't the calculus about Marc Gasol be the calculus about Marc Gasol? Or as they get further and further away from clinching or finishing ninth, the calculus
about Marc Gasol has to be about more than this season. You're out of the playoffs, you got to trade Marc Gasol. The Marc Gasol consideration has to be about beyond this season. Like, what do they want? I don't know the answer to that. Would they want Marc Gasol back on some kind of extension that would obviously lower his salary but would keep him here? Do they want to just move on completely from Marc Gasol? That's not a question that's about this season. That's a question that's about next season and beyond. And that's the question they need to ask themselves. And depending on what the answer to that is, it may govern whether they do something now. The other thing that would govern whether they do something now is whether teams are offering anything for Marc Gasol, right? If someone comes in and makes him an offer better than they could have imagined, they'll probably trade Marc Gasol. If they don't get any offers that are any better than, like, what might happen this summer or than just letting them walk, then there's no reason to trade Marc Gasol. It's not like we're out of the playoffs, you got to trade Marc Gasol. To me, that's sort of nonsense. And so the Marc Gasol decision is bigger than this season. In terms of this season, the real question is, like, same question applied to a different thing. Like, what do they want? Obviously, they want to make the playoffs, and that is
increasingly far-fetched.
It's inching closer to certain. We're not at certain yet, but it's inching closer to certain that that's not going to happen. And so, absent that, like, what do they really want? And I was playing with lottery odds today to get a better sense of it. But the variable I can't add is what the Grizzlies want. Like, what is their tipping point, right, in terms of the picks? Depending on what their internal tipping point is, like, at what point would they rather keep the pick, at what point would they rather lose it, that may determine, like, how they play out the rest of the season. But at this point, I think whatever they do in terms of decision-making, for the most part, is about beyond this season. The Marc Gasol decision is bigger than this season, and I do think that any other secondary trades they make have to be bigger than this season. It has to be future-oriented, even if they still want to try to compete well enough to get rid of the Boston pick. They have to be thinking about future. And so your Jamichael Green question isn't like, what can he do for us this season? It is, do we want to try to resign him next summer? If we don't, what can we get a future value? You know, I think you have to think beyond this season on just about everything.
Is it not okay, I understand that, and I certainly understand that at what point is some of this is their assessment of the draft, at what point the odds and the tipping, well, all that stuff is true.
They have 9 games from now the deadline. If they go 9-0, like, that may change.
Yes.
Then maybe that does change things, right? But absent some dramatic turnaround, I think.
But here's my question. If it looks increasingly, I guess this is the tipping point that, yes, it has to do with the future, but it could happen right now. Is they have to make an assessment of whether they realistically have a good shot to finish ninth, if that's what they want. I'm going to presume that's what they want, right?
Right.
And at some point, if that looks increasingly far-fetched, as when right now we know the playoffs look increasingly far-fetched, if they make the determination that, listen, we're not finishing ninth, the schedule can ease up and whatever else has happened, we're playing like crap, we're not finishing ninth, we might as well gun for fifth, which we might be able to catch Atlanta, for example, or we might as well. And so therefore, that wouldn't that have an impact on what you think about Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green and might even tip how you feel about a Marc Gasol offer, probably less so that one.
Yes, but that's what I was alluding to when I said I was going over the lottery odds earlier this morning, because fifth might change things. Fifth, you're 4.5 games back. But right now you're tied for six. And this assumption, we've talked about how like eight is the worst place to be.
Right.
Eight is the worst place to be in terms of your draft pick. That is not sort of – you have to clarify when you're talking about
right.
the draft pick or the lottery spot, right? Eighth is maybe not the worst place to be in terms of lottery spot. It may be that sixth is the worst place to be in terms of lottery spot. That depends on what you actually want. If your goal is to avoid picking five through eight, then you're more likely to pick five through eight if you go into the lottery, you know, at the seventh or the sixth or even the fifth slot than you are at the eighth slot. If you talk about right. can you get the fifth, if you get the fifth, you have a 57% chance of picking five through eight. If you're at the eighth spot in the lottery, you have a 35% chance of picking five through eight. And so,
because the odds are, if you're picking eighth, the odds are pretty good that you're going to get bumped down a slot.
If you're picking eighth,
if you're not picking eighth, if you go in with an eighth, if you go in the eighth slot.
If you're eighth going into the lottery, you have a 26% chance of getting into the top four. You have a 35% chance of picking five through eight, which really is just eight because you can't pick five through six. And you have a 39% chance of dropping out of the top eight. And so if you break it down just to those three categories, one through four, five through eight, nine, and or later, which is what I did for now, then your greatest odds, it's close, but your most likely scenario is dropping out of the top eight, even if you go into a lottery slot at eight. The variable in all this is what is the Grizzlies' breaking point? Is it top two? Do they not care about the third pick? You know, is this draft such a Zion and RJ or bust that like they would rather pick third or fourth? Or do they like it down to five or six? That's what I don't know the answer to. And depending on where you want to draw the line, would yield different odds for where you want to be.
Let's assume that they'd be happy to be in the top four. Here's the real problem, though, is that right. I don't see any way. If they don't convey the pick this year, I find it very unlikely that they're not going to be in the top six next year, right? Very unlikely. Really hard to believe because Mike and Mark are going to, even if they came back, and I don't believe they both will, they're going to be presumably worse than they are this year . And so you're looking at basically, and then the next year you're going to be in a midst of a complete rebuild at that point, young players abounding, and you're going we are headed directly, it's like a meteorite that is coming to your planet, and there's nothing you can do to stop it, it feels like to me. Doesn't it? I mean, a little bit?
It could be. One argument you could make is just, like, ignore it, because you can't
control
worry about
it,
rebuilding
right.
your team, and whatever happens, right? And if you do that, you say, we're just rebuilding starting now, and we know at some point in the next 3 years we're giving up a pick, and it'll just happen when it happens, and it'll suck, but it'll just happen. But at that point, you stop being strategic about it. You're just like, okay, what can we do to start building assets, right? You're putting Jamichael Green on the market, Garrett Temple, and Justin Holiday, just getting whatever future assets you can. And with the Marc Gasol thing, you're making a very complicated calculation because it's possible if you traded him now, what you get back is less valuable to you long-term than if he just walks. But what if he doesn't walk? He's got an opt-in, right? And if he's not getting more money than that next season from anyone else if he opts out. Now, I tend to believe he'd get enough on a long-term deal that I do not personally believe he would opt in just to the 1 year, but it's possible. And if you're committing to a rebuild now, like do you want to trade him just to eliminate that possibility, right? So the Gasol thing is complicated regardless of what your plans are because there's so many contingencies. The future will say it's time to rebuild and we'll just let the draft pick take care of itself. And then you definitely start trying to trade, everything that's not Marc Gasol or Mike Conley, because the Gasol and Conley stuff gets complicated. You're looking to trade them or move them in a way that's most beneficial, and it's hard to tell exactly what that is. But with like Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green and Justin Holiday, like it's easy.
It is funny too. Let's just say in 2021. And by the way, folks have since informed me that that Woj reported this fall that the league notified teams that 2021 will not be the double draft. That nothing
right.
will happen before. So there is not that fear that 2001.
Yeah, I had mentioned that, I think, in the mailbag, and I had missed that had come out.
I had
to. That just removes a layer of complication.
It just removes a layer of complication from the whole thing. But the truth of the matter is, it's interesting, because if they're giving up their pick in 2021, right, We'll be sitting there in the lottery, and we'll be thinking, my God, I hope they don't get the first pick, right? But the truth of the matter is, you're not get because it'll be more painful, because it'll be an opportunity lost. But you're not going to be getting something that week, that year from the draft anyway. In terms of building your own team, it doesn't matter if you finish fifth in the lottery or first in the lottery, because you're not getting anything anyway. It's a little bit like, you know, like I will say, when the Grizzlies had to rebuild, A, around not having the pick for Carmelo Anthony, they didn't have that. B, picks they'd blown with Hashim Thabeet, et cetera. They found other ways to build, and I guess that's just what you do.
Well, you're gonna have to. I mean, more than likely, any path to success is going to be a mix of different methods of acquiring players, right? There are some teams that you're bad 3 years in a row, and you hit 3 years of, you know, Oklahoma City, right? You have three top five picks in a row, and you come out of it with Kevin Durant and James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Then you flip James Harden, you know, for, you know, Steven Adams, whatever. Like, you got value even though you traded them. And so, like, their rebuild was basically, not entirely, but basically like hitting on a bunch of lottery picks. For most teams, if you look at how they got to where they got, it's a mix, right? I mean, in most cases, you're hitting on a lottery pick if you're not a big major market. And it looks like the Grizzlies did that with Jared Jackson. But if they get good again in 3 years, it's probably not going to be just because they hit on a bunch of lottery picks. It's going to have to be a mix of different types of player acquisition.
The difficulty will be, of course, when Jerry West was fuming about not having the second pick, the former GM who made that trade was not here. No, it wasn't Jerry West who made that trade. It is hard to imagine a scenario where you would have Chris Wallace standing there saying, what are we going to do? Et cetera. But that's a topic for another day. Really quickly, against Toronto, Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, they didn't have Mark, et cetera. Jaren Jackson Jr. only had two fouls, and now my computer has collapsed. Oh, here it is. Here's the box score.
He had two fouls. He played 29 minutes.
And he took 12 shots, right.
Yeah. I mean, part of that is they got into garbage time, and he actually didn't play the garbage time, I don't think. And so that's part of it. I think he was on pace. He played 16 minutes at the half. So he was on pace to play 32, which I would argue still isn't very much. But even without that, and like everyone's saying this now, like Brevin's been saying it for a month, Brevin Knight. Even Pete Brannigan was saying it in the Toronto game. Put this guy on the floor and give him the ball. Like, it's not even like a development thing at this point. It is a development thing, but he's just your best scorer right now. Like, you know, he shoot over 50%, even in these games where your offense is otherwise collapsing. Like, what's the harm in, like, letting Jaren Jackson get 20 shots in a game? And if you weren't going to, you know, do it against Toronto with Marc Gasol not there, I don't understand it at this point. I really don't.
And then finally, you had Matt Herdlicka, who has a Patreon page. People can subscribe to that, read his thoughts on the Grizzlies. You had him on the podcast over at the Daily Memphian. I urge people to go listen to it. But then I saw you going back and forth on possible Gasol trades with him as well. Any other possible Gasol trades popped up in your head or in his head that make sense to you?
I mean, we both have all kinds of trades come up in our heads, which has very little bearing on reality. On Friday, when you weren't there, Jeffrey asked me, like, at the end, like, you listed all these teams. What teams do you think make the most sense? And I believe I said on Friday, I may be wrong about this because I can never remember what I say the second it comes out of my mouth, but I believe I said, you know, Toronto would make the most sense if they were interested, but they're probably not. And then I believe I mentioned Charlotte and Detroit on the radio. And then when the thing that Matt wrote today, he had Charlotte as his most – the one he thought made the most sense, too. And, you know, it's – the thing about that, and there have been no published rumors about this, it's just us talking, but, you know, that's a team that really, really wants to make the playoffs right now, and they're not guaranteed to do so, and they're not very good in the middle. They're also a team that gets 40 points a night out of its backcourt, and so, like, Marc Gasol would be a good fit there because they didn't have to score that much, right? Anchor your defense, be a secondary scorer, like Kemba Walker, go nuts. And, like, they have mechanisms, you know, they have a bunch of big contracts that go into next year but not beyond next year. And they have a lot of, you know, assets in terms of draft picks, in terms of young players, Malik Monk, Miles Bridges, whatever. Like, it's easy to construct trades for them and to see how they would make sense. But there's obviously been no reporting whatsoever that they're a team that's interested in that or vice versa. But if you're just trying to look around the league and make up trades, Matt and I both hit on Charlotte as one of the more likely ones.
Chris, thanks very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington. Sleepy Seas Mattress and Furniture by Michael Zellner is where you can save 50 to 80% off retail store prices every single day of the week. Named the best mattress store in Memphis in 2015, 16, 17, and 18. That's better even than the Patriots. Even than the Patriots. And unlike the Patriots, Sleepy Seas Mattress and Furniture carries Serta Eye Comfort and Simmons Beauty Rest. They've got a complete line of Serta adjustable bases. They got a whole showroom full of furniture from Signature Design by Ashley and Benchcraft. Sleepy Seas has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, perfect five-star Better Business Bureau customer review rating with nearly 500 positive reviews. That's more than any other Mid-South mattress store, and it's more than any other Mid-South furniture company. And if you mention my name, Jeff Calkins, you will get an additional 10% off anything in the store. Sleepy Seas located at 2790 Kirby Witten Road at the corner of Summer Avenue right next to Hollywood Feed. Give them a call. 692-6200, Sleepy Seas by Michael Zellner, where you never wake up on the wrong side of the bed. When we come back, there were some NFL games yesterday. We got to get back to them, including the remarkable, prescient Tony Romo. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hardest working show. You don't realize we are the hardest working. Well, Jason and John. We're here. Jason and John is here. No one else.
I'll be here again at 2.
Are you doing Eric's show?
Oh, yeah. Because Eric will be down at the forum because he's
You're going to be doing Eric's show.
Correct.
Oh, so that show is on. GP, no GP show.
Correct. So the Eric Castleton show will run from 2 to 3:30. Then Gary Darby has a special pregame from 3:30 to 4, then you have the Grizzlies Network pregame from 4 to 4:30, then Eric will have tip-off at 4:30.
We're like Lou Gehrig, man.
Absolutely. You close your eyes.
Yeah, a lot like.
Just move over me, Ripken.
Call me Iron Horse. Yeah, Cal Ripken. I'd rather be Cal Ripken. Given the way that the whole Lou Gehrig thing went. Anyway, all right, back to the NFL yesterday. It was a unbelievably gripping day in NFL football. One of the astonishing things, I think if you're going to say who had the best performance yesterday, you could say Brady, right?
Sure.
Brady, who makes it back to yet another Super Bowl.
So happy for him.
5 Super Bowls in 8 years for the Patriots, 9 Super Bowls overall. They are, you could say the Pats running, you could say Belichick, right?
I think Sony Michel.
I can say Sonny Michel. Belichick, they ran the ball 48 times for 176 yards and kept it for 43 minutes. They played keep away phenomenally. In a loud place, in a cold place, they were like they're unbelievable. It's why So the Pats are driving to take the lead before Mahomes Brax brings it back. With 37, 39 seconds? What was it? It was whatever.
37, I believe.
To tie it up.
37 with one timeout.
The pick. Brady throws the ball. It's picked.
Yep.
I had been saying all along, I am not going to be suckered in. I am not going to be suckered in. I am not going to be suckered in.
Mm-hmm.
The ball settles into the hands of the Kansas City defender. Mm-hmm. And you know what I was not?
You were convinced that that was just a glitch in the Matrix. That wasn't it.
I knew it. Like,
yes.
I wasn't it literally in my mind. Mm-hmm. Did I celebrate in my mind?
No, and in fairness, the Pats had three timeouts. So you could easily have...
I just wasn't prepared to... I did not. I was beginning to be hopeful at that point. Mm-hmm. But I did not. And sure enough, there was a flag and D Ford jumped off... Didn't jump offside. Lined up offsides.
Yes.
Someone pointed out to me, by the way, that the reason he... lined up offsides, was that the left tackle
was a yard back.
And so now you're supposed to just look at the damn ball and get your – you're not supposed to look at the tackle and say I'm not – and I'm not – you know, that's not excusable.
Mm-hmm.
But he obviously lined up relative to the tackle rather than relative to the ball, which was moronic, but still.
Even so, let's say that would have been called. So that would have been too many men in the backfield. That would have been illegal formation. That would have been offsetting penalties because he still would have been lined
right,
up offsides.
Exactly. Right. It doesn't. Yes.
So they would have replayed the play again.
I didn't mean it as like it would have. I just mean it would have, why he chose to do it. It would have. Yes. It would have. It might explain what the hell he was thinking. Is all I'm saying. So you could say that Sean McVay had the best game. You could say.
I thought Goff made some big time plays.
Made some. Big time plays. There's no question. Goff made some big time plays.
Aaron Donald was awesome yet again, but that's kind of what he does.
But I think you got to go Tony Romo.
I think you do.
I think you got to go Tony. I have never, so we're going to play here. It was like witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
It was, as I said, watching Tony Romo call an NFL game is like watching Woj. Call the NBA draft.
Mm-hmm. Picasso paint.
Tells you exactly what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Before it happens, this is something we have never seen this.
Mm-hmm.
We've had maybe a draw play might be smart here, you know, whatever. And then they don't run a draw
play. Thanks, buddy. It was 3rd and 28. Thanks.
Whatever. Yeah, right. A draw play might be the way to go here. Whatever. He literally sees the formation and tells you exactly what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dominant. It was Bill Walton against. By the way, Bill Walton is going to be here as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was Bill Walton against the against Memphis State.
Mm-hmm.
Like he might have missed one, which is what Walton did. It was unbelievable. Here it is.
He saw what you saw, Tony.
Taking back the lead.
They're going to run this ball. Kansas City's got to sell out.
There's a handoff to Burkhead.
Burkhead pulls ahead and scores the touchdown. I got to put Gronkowski out wide. They've got to get him. He's your guy when it's one-on-one. They finally got him. There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. He goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch. With 4 yards away from...
New England tried to play action earlier. I can't see it here. This has to be a run.
Second and goal to Burkhead. Burkhead to the end zone.
Gronk's got a chip. Running back's got to help, so he has time to throw. Once again, Edelman in the middle of the field.
Pocket sealed. Down the middle.
They've got to go back to the Brady sneak or something, don't they? Oh, they're killing it. Usually means a motion and a run out wide to the right.
Here's the handoff. Sony Michel.
Gronk is out wide. Watch the top of your screen. Watch this safety. If he comes down, there's a good chance he's throwing out there.
It's Gronk for the first down. Hello, Super Bowl. New England is heading back again for the third straight year.
Okay. So how can he do it? And then if he can do it, how come no one else has ever been able to do it?
I think it's twofold. Number one, I think it also shows how much more prepared Tony Romo is for this job than so many others. But
Troy Aikman's a quarterback. He looked at everything. He'd seen everything. He'd seen all the whatever. Boomer Esiason. We've had lots of quarterbacks who have made their living sizing up defenses before a snap and not then be able to get in the booth and tell you exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think also now back when so many of those guys played, you had so many different variations of how teams played offense. And now almost everyone is doing this sophisticated. Like, for instance, I mean, Troy Aikman always had a fullback behind him. They were I formation. You were giving the ball to Emmitt Smith. Like, they were a
that
power.
That should have made it easier to call, to predict then.
But I'm saying for him, like, he's not familiar with all these systems. And now in the NFL, even when Romo was playing,
I see.
Everyone was playing this essentially the same. Everyone maybe has different ways of doing it. Maybe they have different emphasis, but everyone's essentially doing the same thing. And then on top of that, I think what it really just comes down to is I think Romo's just better prepared. I think Romo watches more film.
He's better prepared during the week.
Exactly.
In other words, they've both had the career of preparation.
Yes.
But you think – and well, it's also – and maybe it's something that no one else sort of knew that would be fun.
Like, sure.
It's kind of a parlor trick, right? And
well, and there's also the fear of
– being wrong.
Exactly.
If you predict a play and it's not and you keep doing it over and over again – and you're wrong every time.
Exactly.
You look like an idiot.
Yes.
It's got to be a throw here. Like to say it's going to be a slant to Edelman here.
Right.
It only looks smart if it's a slant to Edelman
right.
here, and he's pretty definitive about it.
Oh yeah,
it's unbelievable though. Now, do you think that the next question is? There's leads to several questions. Why wasn't he a better quarterback? He was a good quarterback. He was a very good quarterback. But why wasn't he even better?
I think he was. I think the problem is I think those were bad teams, and I think he was the king of getting them to, like, 8-8. And I think part of the reason – like, I think Romo has more Rodgers in him probably than any other quarterback in that same generation. But the problem was they were so bad, he would elevate them to just mediocrity, and that kind of prevented them from getting better because they never stunk.
Interesting. So you think he was great?
I think he was great.
Okay. Well, then the next question is, if he saw all this coming,
yes.
Did the Kansas City defensive coordinator see it all coming? And if so, why didn't they stop it?
The one that I would have had a really big problem with, Romo, it's in the middle. When they ran motion across the formation, it was very obvious that Romo had seen that on field. Here's what they like to do. They're either going to stop the motion receiver on the left side of the formation. He's going to run a quick out. And then when he goes across the formation, they run the ball to the right to get numbers. How you don't adjust to that makes absolutely zero sense to me. The other stuff is...
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sophisticated enough to know
that one,
this.
That one's bad.
Here's my question.
That's
Does
bad.
Every football coach know? Let's say those two throws over the middle to Edelman?
Correct.
Does every football coach, if I'm talking to Mike Norvell or anyone else,
yeah.
Looking at that set, the way that
Ed, yes,
does everyone know that he's going to go to Edelman then?
Yes, because of the defensive alignment. And this is the problem.
And I guess you can't take away everything in a defensive alignment, right?
For
so
sure.
You're saying this is what I'm giving him to. Now, in fairness to Brady, he always makes the throw.
Sure.
Like,
and that
I
was the other thing.
I understand that
on third downs especially, he was putting the ball so perfectly. Like, he was so great last night. Especially
like
late.
Like when he would throw, like there was that one when the other one where D Ford, I think it was D Ford, rushed him
yes.
a little bit and he stepped up
like by one step. Yeah.
And you're surprised by it.
Yes.
And he's 41 years old.
Yes.
They're 13 of 19 on third down. Yeah. And a lot of that, listen, I know they ran for 176 yards and ran it 48 times and everything else. But in the end, like that drive was throws.
Yeah. So essentially.
41.
Essentially what happened on so many of those Edelman throws over the middle, what they're doing defensively is they are playing cover two with man coverage underneath it, meaning they have two high safeties or the last line of defense, and then everybody else is going man-to-man. When you do that, based on the formation, you open up the middle of the field because everyone's spreading out the field. So, and because those guys are in man coverage, you know the middle of the field's going to be open. So then all it becomes is Julian Edelman just has to get an inside release, meaning he has to basically make the defender think he's going to go to the outside, cut it back inside, and he's going to create so much separation that that's why he's there. This has also been my larger point, football nerd 101. I think cover two is vastly overplayed in the NFL because for this one reason. It opens up the middle of the field, and every quarterback now in the NFL can throw over the middle, can throw seam routes.
Tyrod can't.
That might be fair, but even Tyrod could have hit that pass. Like, I'm not saying he would have in the moment, but
Josh Allen couldn't have either. He would have sailed it.
He would have taken off. Let me tell you what,
he would have taken off is what you would have done.
You would have gone, wow.
Josh Allen would have left his hands. Right. Yeah, you would have when the rocket left his hands.
Right. Then you would have seen where it landed.
What it makes you realize is, it's funny because we were just talking to Elliot about how, Elliot Perry was in here, and we were talking about how he found that the trip really revealed that you just can't do what the Grizzlies are trying to do. Like, yes, the game has just changed,
yes,
right? And one of the debates with football all year long has been, can you do it the other way?
Right.
Can you just play defense and whatever?
Yep.
And when you just see those teams moving up and down and up and down, you just think, now, of course, you can't do it if you don't have one of those dudes at quarterback.
No,
and so where does that take you? You know, I don't, like, go get one of those elite dudes at quarterback. But that's not that easy. Anyway, so here we are, Patriots Rams, mm-hmm, go Rams. No one believed, and do not tell me that this Patriots underdog BS, mm-hmm, is nonsense, mm-hmm, right? Nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
No one believed they sucked. People did believe that they were not quite as potent as they were.
For sure.
Right? I think that's true. And I think they probably aren't as potent as they have been, right? This is not the best Patriots team.
And for God's sakes, they're doing it out there with a lacrosse player out wide in Kevin Hogan.
Chris Hogan, sorry.
Kevin Hogan was
former really, Buffalo Bill.
Kevin Hogan's back quarterback.
Right.
But they're doing it with Hogan.
Chris Hogan and Edelman
doing it with
back
Edelman,
from whatever.
Rex,
yeah,
Burkhead?
Right. Yes. I mean, it's they're what I will say this.
The ghost of Rob Gronkowski?
Is when everyone says that the Patriots suck.
Dorsett? How many times gave up on Dorsett?
When he says that, it is true that everybody believes that the Patriots suck. But not in the qualitative sense.
No.
They just hate them.
Yes.
That's what they mean. When they say they just hate them.
It's an emotional sense.
And it was... Twitter reaffirmed everything I said. I was saying this is literally the whole country, except for. And now you didn't even get what you wanted because you didn't get the Breeze. The only reason you wanted Breeze, you wanted Brady in the Super Bowl, was because you wanted Breeze Brady.
Yeah.
You didn't want Brady Romo. I mean Brady Goff.
No.
I like to take Brady Romo, honestly. I'd take is Romo Goff. I just don't want to deal with this again for 2 weeks. But here we are. And it clearly also reaffirms that they are the most hated team in sports. Warriors, second. But Patriots.
In American sports, yeah.
In American sports.
Yeah, I don't know if we can.
In American sports.
Yes.
In American sports, yes.
Because I just don't notice the hate of the Yankees like it used to be.
No. It's people hate them in the sense of it's traditional to hate them. But what's there to hate? Really, right? I mean, they're honestly, they're probably more hate spilling over into the Red Sox now, just Boston.
Absolutely.
General hate. It's just envy disguised as – it's hate which is based on envy. I fully admit that. I'm not –
13 rings and since 2000 or
yeah,
something like that.
I make no illusions. I understand there's you know
– It's pure jealousy.
It's pure jealousy, yeah. I'm not – I make no pretense about this. All right, we got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're here with Dr. Keith Amodeo of Collierville Weight Loss. I guess there's no better time to get into weight loss and a healthier lifestyle than right now. Now's the time. Today's the day to jumpstart your world to a healthier you. And if you could encourage people, Dr. Keith, what would you say?
Fatter than you were last year? Chronic fatigue? Low sex drive? Clothes size just kept getting bigger? It's football season again, so that means chicken wings, beer, and for the average male, an extra 10 pounds. There's never an easy time to lose weight or get healthy. Why not start now before you go up another belt size or shirt size? My program requires no exercise, no shots, or dangerous drugs. It's all natural, so if you're tired of being overweight, fatigued, and having low sex drive, and shopping for bigger and bigger clothes, call my office at 901-221-221. 8964.
Call Collierville Weight Loss Center today at 901-221-8964. That's 901-221-8964. Visit ColliervilleWeightLoss.com.
New Year's resolutions?
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Off today, in which case, get yourself to O'Call. People wait 6 months for their semi-annual sale, and it is that time. Time to get to legendary clothing store in Memphis, where they have the best clothes, the best service. We're in a jacket, right? In fact, Jeffrey, I was at MUS the other day, speaking at your alma mater, and where was my jacket from?
O'Call.
Now, I did learn, when I was there, a nickname for you. Your Latin teacher, I think it was your Latin teacher, came up to me and he said,
Coach Sutter,
you know what we called Jeffrey Wright when he was here? And I said, what's that? And he said, Jeffrey Never Wrong. Is this true? You were known for your hot takes even then? That's good. It's a career in radio.
I would say it was more Jeffrey Always Right. But yes, that's the spirit. It had many variations.
Jeffrey Always Right. The idea was, right.
You're talking to the 2 minute drill champion of
them. My point is, when I want to look my very best, I go to O'Call. And you should too. Right now, at O'Call, 50% off all men's winter clothing. And that's all. Not 30 to 50, not 25 to 50, not 50 off some, not whatever. Off of all men's winter clothing and accessories, the entire stock. Not every size is available in every group. Caveat, but 50% off men's winter clothing and accessories. This is the moment to get to Oak Hall. Do yourself a favor. Say hello to them when you get there. All right, we got to wrap this baby up.
Now it's the closing argument.
It appears heads are going to roll because of this officiating morass.
Yes.
Is it a tainted Super Bowl? No, it's not. I mean, it is tainted in the sense that the Saints should be there. If the correct call had been made, the Saints would be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true.
Yes, if that call is made, I find it highly unlikely that the Rams.
I suppose
they would have 30
could
seconds.
Could have happened.
They would have roughly 30 seconds with
no
timeouts.
They could have not scored. They could have missed the field goal or not scored a touchdown or whatever, right?
Sure. I mean, they would have had to have run. They would have had to run.
I bet the win probability at that point on ESPN would have been 98%, right?
Oh, higher, I bet.
99% win probability at that point. Well, probably not, because it would have been ridiculous. So who's getting fired?
So, according to Peter King of NBC Sports, will side judge Gary Cavalletto or down judge Patrick Turner or both be fired for missing the most obvious pass interference penalty in playoff history? If the call gets made, it's conceivable or perhaps likely the Saints would have made the Super Bowl. This is where it becomes even more interesting. As soon as this call got made, according to King, I heard from a couple of acquaintances/sources about the impact of it. Quote, Al Riveron, the executive vice president of officiating, is gone, one source said. He can't survive this, end quote. Another said the league will have to pay big bucks to bring back Dean Blandino or Mike Pereira, less likely. I think Riveron was on thin ice before Sunday. What the NFL should do if he decides to dump Riveron is pay realistic money to get Blandino back from his cushy gig at Fox. He's a trusted and trustworthy guy.
With all due respect.
Yep.
How do you blame him?
Because he's in charge of officiating.
I understand that. So the buck stops here, blah, blah, blah. But, people are going to miss calls.
Right.
Like, is that a training issue? It's not a training issue. It's just you missed it. Now, maybe you had the wrong person on the playoff.
Sure.
Is that the only way it would be his fault is if he had the wrong crew.
Sure.
Is if these guys had proven to be
Correct.
Dorks during the – or yeah, clunkers during the regular season.
Correct.
And he put them on anyway, and then they blew it.
Correct. Because and that does not appear to be the case.
People
because,
miss calls.
Right.
They just miss calls, and that's not his fault.
Correct. And that entire crew all game had erred on the side of let them play, let them play,
let them play. Such a fallacy, by the way.
I mean, I agree.
Because let them play, by letting them play, you determine in the exact same way as that you do by not letting them play.
100%. I mean, your job is to officiate the game. Officiate the game.
Your job is to officiate the game. Right. If you don't call a pass interference, what you're saying is that a catch that would have been made is not made and you didn't call it. So that's nonsense. And I'm not saying he's done a good job as head official officiating at all, but I'm saying I have a hard time blaming him for that.
No. I mean, and that's the other thing. It's like, if Roby Coleman just plays the football.
God, Roby Coleman had another one, too.
That would have been a pick six. And then the worst one was it Jenkins? One of the safeties breezed through what should have been an easy interception that Ted Ginn ends up catching. It was so horribly played. That's how they got down there. That if he just plays the football, like, that was just an easy pick.
Oh, no, yes, that's true. But at least that's football players making plays or not making plays. The Roby Coleman one that I was talking about earlier was, there was another pass interference he got away with.
Oh, yeah, where he just held him on, yeah.
On a big third down.
Yep.
And Roby Coleman afterwards, like, no one was pretending this was anything other than a blown call.
Roby Coleman was
100% said it was a blown call.
Yeah.
I don't recall. I mean, there must be other blown calls that just literally determine such a massive game so clearly.
Man, it's tough to think of one that bad because
Brad Hall's foot in the crease.
Yeah,
if you're a hockey fan.
On this
but you're
one,
not.
There were so many things. It wasn't just pass interference. You could have called helmet to helmet. You could have called defenseless receiver. Like it wasn't just pass interference that you could have called. Like there were multiple things that would have created the exact same situation where it's first and 10, basically inside the 10-yard line with a minute 50.
Instead, we get the Rams, and they're a rabid fan base.
Just so happy for
they're
L.A.
Literally the worst fan bases in the world are being rewarded here, right? L.A., which doesn't give a flip, and New England, which is spoiled beyond belief.
Those were some of my favorite videos from yesterday that were going around. Like
the bars in L.A. where no one cared?
Just those bars where – no, there's one video where the kick went through, and then the guy goes, is it over?
Yeah. I saw that. It was ridiculous. Okay, what's next?
Here's what's coming up next.
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz is going to join their program. Also, Mike Miller will join at 11:25. You aren't going to want to miss that. I'll be back in studio at 2 o'clock, host of the Eric Hasseltine Show. Eric's going to join me as well as Jonah Jordan to discuss the Tigers. And then, of course, the Martin Luther King game. 4:30 tip here, special pregame with G-Darb at 3:30, as well as network pregame at 4.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Our work here is done.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.